Hello, and welcome yet again to another episode of D History. Glad you could join us today. We will be going live with our seventh episode this week. So, welcome back. And as usual, you're welcome to leave us any feedback at our email address, which is disney.history@yahoo.com. So, we're looking forward to getting some feedback soonish. We now have a lot of listeners, so big yell out to all you guys all around the world. Last week, our focus was on the Sweet Life of Zack and Cody, the ongoing television show on the Disney Channel. This week, we'll head back to the Disney animated feature films. And our feature this week will be on Atlantis: The Lost Empire, which was released in 2001 on the 15th of June by Walt Disney Pictures. It's an animated science fiction mixed action movie and is the 40th film in the Disney animated features canon. The movie is set in 1914, where an expedition crew goes off to find the lost city of Atlantis, which is well known in historical terms. At the box office, Atlantis did not do that well. It made approximately $85 million in the USA, well below its production cost of $120 million. And it was nowhere near the high standard created by 1994's The Lion King, which took in $312 million domestically in the US. Although it did go on to make about $186 million worldwide, which covered the budget costs, it's still seen as a bit of a disappointment to Disney, which went on to a stretch to include Treasure Planet and Home on the Range as well. The film has a dramatic opening sequence depicting the fall of the city of Atlantis, a first act that establishes the story, bold dialogue, and an interesting visual look. It also won praise for daring to break away from the comfort of Disney's animated musicals, which had dominated the 1990s. It was trying to be a serious action-adventure story. While this was said, generally the critics didn't really like the film. The characters were seen to be too one-dimensional, and the cast was too large with too many characters, and the main character, Milo, was said to be too remote to the audience, and they didn't really get to know him too well. A lot of the historical background to the movie is also said to have been a little bit false. There's been a lot of controversies over it, but there was also a lot of logic that was said to be lacking in the creation of the movie, where there's lots of secret coding language in the movie. And I mean, if you want to see the movie, go and see it. You'll understand what I'm talking about if you've seen it or if you're a fan of the movie. The movie's also been criticized by some viewers for bearing a striking resemblance to a famous 1990s Japanese animation television show called Nadia, The Secret of Blue Water. The similarities include character designs, story flow, background settings, and more, which isn't too good. Which, I mean, both the television show and the movie Atlantis were inspired by the Jules Verne novel 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. So, I mean, there's going to be resemblances if they both are inspired by the same story, but oh well, I mean, it's in the past, so there's not much you can do about it now. Atlantis is notable as one of the few animated films shot in the anamorphic widescreen process. To prevent having to purchase and implement larger animation desks, longer animation paper, the production team resorted to working with a smaller frame on the same paper and equipment used for the standard ratio films. Some viewers have noted similarities between the Milo character in the movie and motion picture language consultant Dr. Mark Okrand, who developed the Atlantean language for the movie. Additionally, an interesting aspect of the film is that very few of the characters are under the age of 30, which is quite rare for a Disney movie. Atlantis was also the first animated Disney adventure, or Disney feature film, to have a black character, though he's only half black, the other half being Native American. We'll see in the upcoming Disney's Frog Princess, another black, that should be the first black princess. So, moving forward in the 2000s for Disney. The film was originally supposed to provide a springboard for an animated television series titled Team Atlantis, which would have detailed the further adventures of the characters from the film. However, due to the film's failure at the box office, the series was scrapped. On May 20th, 2003, Disney released a direct-to-video sequel called Atlantis: Milo's Return, which consisted mostly of stories originally produced for the aborted series. The movie consisted of three animated shorts, and an extra 10 minutes of animation was done to link the three stories together so it could make a whole sort of DVD. Also to note, in this sort of direct-to-video sequel, Michael J. Fox's voice, which was done for Milo in the film, was replaced by another character. Well, not another character, another person. James Arnold Taylor was who replaced Michael J. Fox for the voice of Milo. The film also makes reference to a lot of other films. In a graveyard scene in the movie, it contains ships from every Disney movie, which is noted by the main character Milo. Also, one of the gargoyles from The Hunchback of Notre Dame is in Preston Whitmore's library. The car that one of the characters, Helga, drives is nearly identical to the one that Cruella de Vil drives in 101 Dalmatians. And yeah, I mean, the references to other films, there are a few others. I won't go through them. If you want to have a look on the internet, I'm sure you'll be able to find some more references to other films. We'll go into some more trivia from the movie. This was the first Disney animated feature to receive a PG rating since The Black Cauldron, which was released in 1985, I think. This would also start a list of several Disney animated features to take the PG rating, including Lilo and Stitch, Treasure Planet, and Home on the Range. Unfortunately, none of these features turned out to be very successful at all, Lilo and Stitch being an exception there. And this was the first Disney film since The Black Cauldron to be filmed on 17mm film tape. The filmmakers turned to real-life linguistics expert Mark Ockren to create an original, readable, speakable language for the film, which was talked about earlier. It used a 29-letter alphabet, and Ockren made up hundreds of words for the actors to speak in this Atlantean language. To prepare for the production of this film, the filmmakers visited museums and toured old army installations. They also traveled 800 feet underground in New Mexico's, I think it's Carlsbad Caverns, to observe the subterranean trails that would serve as the model for the approach to the Atlantis film. When it came to creating the look of the city of Atlantis, the filmmakers wanted to avoid the common conception of great columns under the sea. So they modeled Atlantis on an architectural ancient civilization in China, the Middle East, and South America. So it's a bit of a mixture. Lloyd Bridges was originally cast as Preston Whitmore, but he died shortly after production on the film began. Also, Tommy Lee Jones, Jack Davenport, and Kurt Russell were considered for the role of Commander Rourke. Jim Varney, who plays the role of Cookie, died just before finishing the film. The "I ain't so good at speechifying" line near the end of the film is the only line not spoken by Varney. Steve Barr did the voice for this scene. This was also Jim Varney's last film, which is pretty obvious considering he died. See if we've got a few more trivia questions. The spiral Atlantis symbol can be found hidden in many places in the movie. The Atlantean king bears a striking resemblance to Yenzed, the sorcerer in The Sorcerer's Apprentice from Fantasia. Originally, the final battle was to be on land. The creators had decided to put the action in the air to create a more dramatic sequence. Because the movie was planned out as an action adventure, the production crew wore t-shirts to work that read Atlantis. Fewer songs, more explosions. After Milo got seasick on the first ship, his line, "Carrots, why are there always carrots? I didn't even eat carrots," was ad-libbed by Michael J. Fox. And one more trivia question. It was reported in 2002 that when the submarine voyage attraction was closed down in Disneyland, it was to reopen with the theme of Atlantis. However, due to negative feedback from critics to the movie, the idea was scrapped. And we now know that the area where Submarine Voyage was in Disneyland in Tomorrowland will be opening in about June this year with the new Finding Nemo attraction, which many people are looking forward to. So domestically in the USA, Atlantis made $84 million, and in the foreign box office, it made $101,997,000. So it took its worldwide box office total to $186 million. We also know that the movie had a lot of taglines. One of the big taglines it used was that it was from the creators of Beauty and the Beast and The Hunchback of Notre Dame. They were hoping that Atlantis would feed off the success of those previous movies, but unfortunately it didn't. Another tagline used was "Atlantis is waiting." Another one was "The adventure in animation continues." And they also used a Plato quote from 360 BC, which stated, "In a single day and night of misfortune, the island of Atlantis disappeared into the depths of the sea." So that's about all we'll have for Atlantis this week. If you've got any suggestions on what we should cover next week or the week after, feel free to email us at disney.history@yahoo.com. We'd love to hear back from you, get a bit of feedback on what you think of the show and whether we're doing a good job or not. So now we'll head into the Disney news for this week. Our first article is that the lead role for the Disney's Frog Princess has been announced. DreamGirls star Anika Noni Rose has signed on to voice Maddie in The Frog Princess. As mentioned before, Rose will be the first Disney Black Princess, and it's going to be the first hand-drawn film Disney has committed to since the Pixar purchase. So that should be good. It's written and directed by Ron Clements and John Musker, and the music's going to be scored by Randy Newman and set in New Orleans. So Anika Rose, any of you remember from Dreamgirls, she wasn't Beyoncé and she wasn't Jennifer Hudson, she was the other one. So she's the skinniest one out of all of them, shortish. So if you need to have a look, do a Google search for her and you'll find a photo of her for sure. So that's big news there for Frog Princess. Some other news at Disney this week is that Disney is planning to officially drop the Buena Vista name used in Buena Vista Distribution, Buena Vista International, and Buena Vista Home Entertainment. The company hopes that this move will further strengthen the Disney name and brand. It's going to be difficult. I mean, it's not that hard to tell that Buena Vista is related to Disney. Its logo has the Sleeping Beauty castle in the background, but the company will continue to use Touchstone and Miramax and Pixar studio names. So they claim that using these brands will be for movies that don't fit the Disney image. So they've used the Disney, Walt Disney Pictures logo for Pirates of the Caribbean. So see what happens from here on with that. In other Disney news this week, we have a new Pirates of the Caribbean featurette has been released by Disney. So the shots of this film are intercepted with filmmakers' comments. So there's some good clips in there with Johnny Depp and Keira Knightley and Orlando Bloom. So if you want to head on down to the Disney website at disney.com, you can check out the new Pirates of the Three featurette, which is on the official website. In other Disney news, THQ, the video game creator, has announced that it will be making a sequel to the Disney Pixar Car video game, which it produced after the release of the movie. It shipped over 7 million units globally, and there will be a sequel called Cars Made It National for Xbox 360, PS3, PS2, Nintendo DS, Wii, and Game Boy Advance. The game will bring a new adventure based on the film, and of course it will feature all the high-speed adrenaline which you'd expect from Radiator Springs. There'll be new characters, new tracks, mini-games, and over 10 multiplayer games. So look out for that in about October, I think. Other THQ news is that they will be releasing the official Disney Pixar Ratatouille game in the summer of 2007. So that's another Disney Pixar game for THQ. If you're into the Disney games, keep an eye out for that in summer 2007, which is about June, July. I'd say end of June, start of July, just before the release of Ratatouille. Other Disney news this week is that in Argentina, the Argentina's second biggest television broadcaster has signed a deal with Disney to air its content and remake programs such as High School Musical. Disney involves exclusive rights to carrying Disney films. Sorry, this deal covers exclusive rights to carry Disney films, series, and programs such as Playhouse Disney, Power Rangers, Kill Bill, and Pirates of the Caribbean. It's a big move for Argentina, and it'll be good because High School Musical will get another sort of spin on it, I guess. I mean, they're going to cast 18 people for the High School Musical Argentinian production, and it's slated for a 2008 release. So if you're in Argentina, you've got that to look forward to. There were rumours during the week that there could possibly be a Disney theme park in Joplin, Missouri. A Springfield newspaper ignited rumours of a Disney theme park, and they published a map of a proposed theme park for the area. And they said that it would be a $1.1 billion theme park, but the rumour has been put down in recent days, so it doesn't look like there will be another theme park added to America, which is a pity, but I mean, it's nice to have a bit of news. In other news, Robin Williams has signed on to star opposite John Travolta in a Disney movie called Old Dogs. It's going to be directed by Walt Becker, and joining the cast is John Travolta's wife, Kelly Preston, and daughter, Ally Travolta. It's a movie about... it's revolving around two best friends and business partners whose lives are turned upside down when they find themselves in the care of seven-year-old twins. Disney bought the project in the summer from David Diamond and David Wiseman as a pitch in a seven-figure deal. The duo also wrote the screenplay. So that should be interesting when that comes out. I'm not sure when production will start, but should be good. In other news, mainly about the Disney-owned ABC network, the talk host Rosie O'Donnell will end her stint as co-host of the ABC's The View in about mid-June when her contract expires. This will finish a nine-month run that saw her do battle with Donald Trump and other celebrities. O'Donnell, who's 45, says that she and the Walt Disney Company failed to come to terms on a contract renewal deal, but she'll return to the show next season for special segments as a recurring guest host. So that's good for fans of The View who like Rosie O'Donnell. She won't be totally off the show, but she won't be there every episode anymore. Some ugly Betty news. A host of actresses are slated to get ugly on ABC's Ugly Betty. Rita Moreno and Justina Mercado will guest star in an episode slated to air in the US in May, titled A Tree Grows in Guadalajara. They'll respectively play Aunt Myrta and Cousin Clara, long-lost relatives of the Suarez clan who Betty and her family meet when they travel to Mexico. Moreno, who won the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress in 1961 for her work in West Side Story, is best known to younger audiences for playing Sister Peta Marie in the prison drama Oz. Mikado is best known for playing Vanessa Diaz in the TV series 6 Feet Under. Actress Rebecca Gayheart, most recently seen in the short-lived series Vanished, will also guest star in Ugly Betty this year. And in other Ugly Betty news, America Ferrera, who plays Betty, is in talks to star in a sequel to the 2005 film The Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants. All the other stars from the original movie are set to sign on, with it being shot in Greece, Turkey, and the USA. Production is due to kick off on June 3rd, giving enough time while Ugly Betty is on a hiatus over the US summer break. So that'll bring this week's episode to a close. Remember, if you've got any feedback for us, give us an email at disney.history@yahoo.com. We'll be looking forward to hearing from you. And we're also now featured in the Disney podcast directory. So if you've found us from the directory this week, since we've been online there, welcome. And also remember that you can give us a feedback comment on the iTunes directory so more people can find us. So if you go to iTunes and search for Disney History, you'll be able to find us there and leave us a positive comment, I hope. So until next week, hope you have a good time and make sure you keep living the magic.